Well, for most of us, certainly for me and probably for you as well, voice is the main tool of communications. In many cases, it's essential to your job. Larry Mueller here. I really appreciate you being with us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're going to take a look at protecting your voice a little, learn about your voice and how to protect it a bit with a couple of guests. Dr. Seth Daly is chief of laryngology at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. He's a specialist in surgery for voice and for swallowing and airway problems. Brianne Ruel is a speech language pathologist, voice specialist at the UW Health Voice and Swallow Clinics. Brianne, thank you for joining us, by the way. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Larry. It's a pleasure to be here.
And Dr. Seth Daly, welcome back. Been a while, but it's good to have you back.
It's great to be back.
Well, I'm really pleased to have you here to talk about various voice issues. And I want to open up the give the number right away so people can join in if they have their own questions. If you may have a question about your voice, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our Facebook page. And happy to have you join in. So in terms of voice, what are the most common problems that we see? Brianne,
sure.
We turn to you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the most common problems have to go back to looking at the most common populations of people who are at risk for voice disorders. This probably is one of the top areas that we try to bring education and awareness to if someone is in a voice profession that is at risk. For example, teachers, lawyers, radio personalities. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the times that we look at then what problems stem from that have to do with kind of how much, how loud, how often that person is talking. And so that can kind of, you know, determine what kind of problems can arise. So for most people, it can be things from vocal strain, just from how much they talk. For others, it can be that they actually end up having changes to their vocal folds or their throat that cause issues.
You know, it's interesting because the NCAA basketball tournament is just over. It's amazing when some of these coaches are interviewed after the game.
Mm-hmm.
You hear them before the game or sometimes at halftime, and then at the end of the game, they have almost no voice left.
It's like night and day for their voices.
Yeah, is that really, is it really hard on a person to have that happen?
Yeah, the problem, of course, with basketball and many of the other sports, if you're a coach or assistant coach, is that you're yelling and screaming over background noise.
Mm-hmm.
And
that
principle applies to anyone who has that situation at work. There's some people, for example, who work in factories or other environments where there's a lot of background noise, and if they are not able to get loud, then they are often asked to be placed into a different spot or have trouble maintaining their job since it's part of their professional responsibility. So as far as vocal health goes with upcoming World Voice Day,
that's
April 16th.
April 16th.
Trying to be cognizant of one's environment and one's voice use in that environment is really critical.
Yeah. And how did we get how did we get a voice day?
Yeah, great question. So it originated in Brazil, actually, in 1999. Oh. They decided, a group of otolaryngologists and voice specialists there decided to start the Brazilian Voice Day. It became then adopted in other South American countries. And then by 2002, otolaryngologists and speech pathologists in the States and beyond developed World Voice Day. So it's been established as April 16th since that time. And gosh, as of yesterday, when I checked the website, there was 423 events in 54 countries worldwide that'll be happening.
And, of course, the goal, I'm sure, is to get people thinking about their voice and what to do if there may be. I mean, when do you see a specialist, for example? Mm-hmm. I assume that's a part of this whole education process. for Voice Day?
Yeah, great question. So one of the kind of more well-known rules of thumb is 2 weeks of hoarseness or changes that are unexpected. You know, go see one of the ear, nose, and throat doctors or a speech pathologist or ideally a comprehensive team. But sometimes it can be other things like throat pain or the strain I was talking about. If your voice isn't recovering after a basketball game yelling and shouting, then that could be a good warning sign.
Yeah. And boy, your voice does. I mean, I can think of situations where I've got a bunch of noise and I'm, you know, it's hard to for over a long period of time to have to sort of strain your voice and talk louder. It hurts.
Mm-hmm. It does hurt.
It does.
So,
and if there was a way to give every person little portable amplification devices, we would.
Oh, well, and, you know, and does anybody ever think much about their care, their, I mean, you know, on a day-to-day basis, unless you get really hoarse or something happens, you never pay any attention or worry about your voice.
Exactly. That's probably one of the most common things I hear us say to our patients is you take this for granted. You know, this instrument, this mechanism that we use to communicate and do so much with, and yet it's not until something happens. And people just assume, oh, it's a cold or it's this or that. But, it can be something that not only can be protected and conditioned, just like an athlete would condition their bodies, but also, you know, even evaluated to see what the baseline is.
Well, callers online certainly to talk with you. So we'll take some calls. Again, the number is 1-800-642-1234. Dana in La Crosse up first. Dana, hi. Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
What's on your mind?
Well, I just spent a few days on vacation with my younger sister, and she's had spasmodic dysphonia for a number of years. And I just noticed she was just, I had to constantly ask her to repeat what she had said. And in the past, I've actually been better at it in terms of being on the phone with her and understanding. She did try Botox for a while, and she just didn't feel it did much. And so, you know, I didn't press her too much when we were together as to other ways that she's been able to, you know, affect it. It's just gotten worse and worse, and I think she might have been whispering more just because, you know, it basically sounds like this when she's talking. So she's just, it sounds like she's straining, very, very difficult, although she's not in any pain. But I was just wondering if, you know, if your guest could suggest some alternatives.
Sure. So that's a really interesting problem. Just to educate some of the other listeners, spasmodic dysphonia is a neurologic condition. It's what's called a focal dystonia or altered tone, where individuals will get spasms of certain muscle groups and only have it during certain tasks. And with spasmodic dysphonia, the task is conversational speech. So, for example, most people will be able to sing rather well. When they laugh at a joke, it sounds pretty normal. But when they go to have conversational speech, they end up most times having these strangle strain events on vowels, which can be really disturbing and disruptive to communication. So what you're describing does usually happen in women more than in men and can happen starting even at a young age. From what you're describing, it may very well be because spasmodic dysphonia is a pretty slippery diagnosis at times, that there may be a little bit more going on. And certainly having a real careful evaluation, even an evaluation over time, because the disease can sort of morph gently with time, is really essential. So if she is having the voice that you describe, it would probably be worthwhile getting it checked out again by individuals such as, you know, here at Madison or wherever she lives, in an area where they actually evaluate that problem with some frequency, because it can be pretty tricky.
Sure. She's in New York, so I mean, I'm sure there's people there that also would be able to address it.
Oh, for sure. I would, for sure. Well, good luck, Dana. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Mike in Hancock has something for us. Hi, Mike.
Well, hi. How you doing today?
Great. Appreciate the call.
I enjoy your show. Say, here's my my question. I'd like to know some do's and don'ts for singers. Mm-hmm. I got my dream job. I'm a retired classroom teacher. Got my dream job. I'm a singer in a pop rock band. And I'd just like to know what I can do to kind of nurture, protect my voice.
Well, that's pretty cool. What's the name of your band?
Fat Acrobat.
Ah, there you go. Is that P-H-A-T or is that F-A-T?
P-H-A-T.
That's what I thought. That's what I thought. Okay. Well, you've come to the right place here, Mike, I think, because Breanne's going to be able to help you out for sure.
Yeah, Mike, that's wonderful that you can do what you love. My first question would be for you, do you warm up your voice before you sing?
Well, I kind of do. On the way over to practice, which I'm heading out for in a minute, it's about in 25 minutes, I usually sing along with something on the radio.
Okay, that's a good start. I definitely hear that a lot, you know, from recreational and professional singers alike. You know, I think it's important to be even a little more specific about the kind of warm-ups that you do, just so you can, you know, keep things like your range and flexibility and stamina, you know, at this point too, especially with the genre of music you're doing. So yeah, my suggestions are always surrounding what kind of tasks you do for warm-up and even cool-down. Like, do you ever do anything after a show or after a rehearsal?
Yeah, but it was by accident, I think.
So that might be a way to kind of, you know, tailor to your voice what you can do. It can be things like, you know, humming scales or doing little lip trills or even some people find it helpful to, you know, blow through a straw. Those kind of things can really start to kind of increase your technical voice needs. But
is that
also
before
give you
or after?
Blowing? Both, actually.
Oh.
A lot of it depends on how much time you spend. So about 15 to 20 minutes is a good warm-up time, about 5 minutes for a cool-down time.
Okay, 20 and then 5 afterwards.
That would be,
thank
yeah.
you so much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, and it sounds like you've got about 20 minutes while you're in the car, so get your straw out, Mike.
That's right.
You just sit and blow on it for a little bit, or what do you?
Yeah, it's a technique that essentially gets to the point of both how much air you're using to make sound and where you place your voice. So the straw naturally brings the voice to the front of the face, so you can blow through the straw doing scales holding out sound.
Oh, so that's what you're doing. Okay, mm-hmm. Well, that's a little different than what I had pictured, so I'm glad I followed up on that. Oh, man. Chris in Two Rivers, how about you? Are you there, Chris? I bet you. Oh, he was also a singer and but apparently doesn't have a follow-up question, must have just heard and was happy with that. So 20 minutes before singing and about 5 minutes after. And when you're at a karaoke situation, you don't really have
that. Use the mic.
I've done that. Some, much to other people's chagrin, I think, at times. Visiting today with Dr. Seth Daly, Chief of Laryngology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, and with Breanne Ruel, who is a speech-language pathologist and voice specialist. They'll be with us right up until 12:30. You stay here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, and in honor of World Voice Day, which is coming up April 16th, we are talking about how to protect your voice and your voice with Dr. Seth Daly, Chief of Laryngology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Seth Daly.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
And as well, Breanne Ruel, who is has Master of Arts.
That's correct.
Master of Arts. Mm-hmm. She's a speech-language pathologist, voice specialist at the UW Health Voice and Swallow Clinics. And we haven't said anything about swallowing, which we certainly should bring that up as well as we visit with you. You may have a question. Maybe you have a problem or an issue with your voice, or maybe just a question about it. I hope you'll join us. 1-800-642-1234, the number to call, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Let's turn to Gene in Appleton. Gene, thanks for waiting. How can we help?
Hi, thank you. I'm going to try to go through this very quickly. My son is completely paralyzed except for his head and neck, and he is completely contractured, okay?
Okay.
He was... able to speak well for quite some time. This is now 10 years. However, the voice has failed, finally failed. But for some crazy reason, he can speak if he eats something, even though he's tube-fed. You know, once in a while we give him a treat or give him a mint or something. We have to watch him, of course. And then suddenly he can speak. And then that wears off rather quickly. But we don't understand why. And the most help he's ever gotten, the most medical care he's ever gotten concerning this, has been speech therapists in hospitals. Mm-hmm. And there's really been not a whole lot of answers.
Wow, that
so
is...
I thought maybe somebody here has an idea of where, why and where we might go from here.
Sure.
Thank you, Gene.
Yeah, Gene, that's a very challenging and interesting situation you have. So it probably is worthwhile mentioning that voice production depends on air from your lungs going past your vocal cords, which are right in the middle of your voice box, and then that sound that the vocal cords make vibrating is shaped by your upper throat, and then that will become speech. If he's capable of making sound and brief periods of speech, I would say that that's a favorable sign and means that somehow it's in there somewhere. Again, not knowing the complexities of his situation and how much control he has over his whole neurologic system, it's hard to be able to say much more beyond that. However, with the right situation and after an appropriate evaluation, it may be possible to get some additional speech back without the events of feeding him or doing the mint or some treat or et cetera. So the fact that he can speak even temporarily, I would say, is a good sign. But without knowing more, it sure is hard to to comment further.
Where would and obviously I'm sure Gene is.
Thank you.
Many times to the doctor and a variety of doctors. What kind of recommendation in that area would you have for her, if any?
Sure. So if it is having to do with speech, going to a place where there are both otolaryngologists, or otherwise called ENTs, because it's sort of a big word and hard to pronounce, and a speech-language pathologist, where they all work together as a team, that would probably be your best bet to have multiple folks evaluating and putting their brains together to try and figure out how to help best. Because it's hard getting good evaluation sometimes in the hospital without specialized equipment, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. And so that, and Gene, I'm sorry, but I really appreciate you calling, and of course, please stay listening. And this is something that you folks do at the University of Wisconsin, is a sort of a team approach, isn't it?
That's right.
Very much so. Yeah,
we're very fortunate in that we are the voice and swallow clinic component is the speech pathology team, and we work literally down the hall in conjunction with our ENT colleagues. But in addition to pulmonary and gastroenterology and allergy and neurology and all these other specialties we have close by, but I think the primary reason that we are able to do what we do is because of the collaboration, and to have that one-on-one, both with the patient being able to see someone like myself and Dr. Daly in a single day, and a full visit.
Yeah.
And that adds a lot to the information. Plus, we're able to collaborate as a team and say, hey, what do you think? And what about this? And, you know, a lot of times with voice, you need a lot of ears to hear what's going on. Sometimes it's not just one person's, take. And so, yeah, we're very fortunate in that way.
And typically, just to extend this one more question, and then we can move on a bit. But typically, will your health insurance kind of cover a situation like that where you have all these different folks, perhaps?
Typically, yes, from an evaluation standpoint.
Okay.
We'll probably need to come back if we want to talk about therapy coverage.
that's
a
different
show on that. But yes, typically that is a advantageous component because they are seeing an ENT and speech pathologist.
Yeah, one thing simply to say about that also is that having a voice disorder is not like having a cosmetic concern where your nose is droopy or you want Angelina Jolie lips or something like that. The voice is used every day by everyone and is part of a grander system of upper airway control for important things like breathing and swallowing and cough and protecting our airways during swallow, for example. So it is an organ that has numerous functions that happen during the day and while you sleep and et cetera. And it's heavily, heavily regulated so that we can survive. And so it is an organ like the liver, like the heart, like the brain, that requires the care of professionals who understand its mechanism, understand the neural hierarchy, understand the conditions, things that can happen to it, not just from overusing one's voice. And so it is subject to all the potential disease processes that affect many other organ systems and should be thought of as such.
Thank you very much.
Gene, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your calling, and good luck. I really appreciate it. I'm glad you called. Carlos in Milwaukee up next. Carlos, oops, I'm sorry. It's not Carlos in Milwaukee. Carlos, you hang on. Jacqueline in Madison is up next. Let's go there. Hi, Jacqueline.
Hi. I've been having trouble with my asthma for the last year or so, and I've noticed that when I'm having an asthma exacerbation, or even when I exercise really hard, I tend to lose the upper registers in my voice and get some laryngitis. Is there something I can do to protect my voice? And also, am I actually causing damage by trying to talk through this asthma stuff?
Mm.
Great question. Can I ask how long does that last after an exacerbation that you lose the upper register?
It can last a day or two.
Okay. You know, often that's, like Dr. Daly was alluding to, does go hand in hand with asthma, with the airway component, because so much of that is tied to how our vocal cords are functioning. The thing that can happen is sometimes, you know, even just acute inflammation, which we all get for various reasons, including asthma, and even from the asthma medications that you probably have to use, the inhalers and whatnot. The day or two is fairly typical for recovery time, meaning that we would expect that, you know, if there is something that is changing because of these exacerbations and the airflow changing as you're having these exacerbations, that it is pretty understandable that those sometimes extremes, high range and low range pitches, will just not quite be there. Resting the voice is key, moderating your voice use, trying not to talk through it, seeing if you can adjust your voice volume, text or email more on those couple days if you do that, and really just making sure, treating it almost like you said, like an acute laryngitis, where you can just pull back a little bit and allow time for some healing.
Mm-hmm.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Carlos in Milwaukee, now, thank you for calling. And what's on your mind?
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call. I'm curious about an issue I'm having. It started about, I'm going to say, 9 months ago. To perhaps a year. I noticed it 9 months ago where I sound like I always have a cold and I lose my voice at times. And now I'm noticing that people, especially when I'm in meetings or something at work, they ask, what did you just say? Because I my voice kind of goes away. I don't have a cold or anything like that.
Yeah.
And I brought the issue to my doctor during a physical. And he just said gargle with Epsom salt and drink tea. But I think it's worse than it's further.
Yeah, it just sounds to me that way. I mean, we can tell you've got a raspy voice there, Carlos. Dr. Seth Daly, what do you think? Start with you.
So, Carlos, do you smoke?
No smoke. I never have my whole
Fine.
Life.
Okay, well, that's good. But for all the listeners, obviously, if you have a progressively worsening voice, whether you hear it or whether other people tell you, you need to go in and get an evaluation right away. So given that you do not smoke, the chances of you having something more concerning in there are lower. But with your voice quality, particularly it being over 9 months and it's not getting any better, you should definitely see a team of voice professionals to get an answer. So unlike, for example, skin conditions, sometimes where we can stare at it on our skin and say, oh, yeah, I have a little eczema or I have a mole or I have something, the voice box is hidden from view. And so in order for us to help a person, we have to look inside, usually through the nose or mouth with small cameras, to be able to view the mechanism and try and help you understand what it is and how to get better.
So, Carlos, should Carlos, you have insurance?
Yes, I do.
All right, so he should what? Go to his primary to get a... Would you need to have a referral for something like this or not?
Depending on your insurance coverage, most people need a referral to go see an otolaryngologist and speech pathologist, yes.
Okay.
But I would go ahead and do that, and I feel quite confident there will be ways to help you get better.
I agree.
Thank you so much, because I feel so uncomfortable like this.
Yeah, you need some help, and...
I bet.
If I were you, I'd hang up the phone here, and then I'd put a phone call in to my physician and get started on this whole process, okay? Do that favor for me, will you? I'd appreciate it. We have Bob in West Allis, who's had some very bad canker sores in his mouth and throat for almost 3 years. I can hardly imagine. I had them once, and it was a terrible experience for me. They're more like mouth sores or ulcers, sometimes 15 or 20 at a time. He's seen a number of doctors but hasn't had any help yet, and I'm not sure if this is an area for you or not, Dr. Seth Daly.
Sure. So what I would say is if you've had these for quite some time, I think it absolutely would make sense for you to go and see an otolaryngologist who can have a look. The mouth is a little bit more accessible than the voice box, to say the least, in terms of having a good look. Sometimes dentists or other oral care professionals will be able to pick up stuff and say, hey, you know, you should go get this checked out. Even getting a little sample of it called a biopsy to look at under the microscope and help figure it out can be... It really takes 5 minutes and is not a big deal. But in terms of voice production, certainly people can have simultaneous voice issues if what's going on in the mouth is also going on in the throat. And again, with a good evaluation by an otolaryngologist, that would be quickly found and figured out.
Karen on Facebook says she had bulbar polio at 12 years old. Now she's up to 70. And
good
has
job.
More loss of voice control and a lot of swallowing problems. One vocal cord is shorter due to polio. Any help for her? Would there be any help for her?
Sure. So, yeah, she has what's called post-polio syndrome. We don't see a lot of polio in the U.S. anymore, certainly newer cases, quite rarely nowadays. But people who have had polio as children have still suffered some elements of weakening to their system, which as healthy adults, they kind of deal with in minor ways. But as we age, some of our overall reserve in power, in vim and vigor, and ability to deal with it becomes less. And so the mechanism of swallowing can be compared to a pump, where we transfer things from our mouth into our throat, which acts as a pump, to push it down into our esophagus, to take it to our stomach so we can have nutrition. But the power of the throat, particularly in post-polio individuals, tends to be less than that of somebody of the same age who has never had polio. That said, there are things that can be done for sure, whether it's therapy, even swallowing exercises, all sorts of recommendations during mealtimes related to head position. But that also, not surprisingly, would require the input of some seasoned professionals who can make recommendations to help you, because that's probably not something that's going to get better next year or the year after that. And so trying to take a bit of a proactive stance seems to be a logical step here.
Another Karen from Eau Claire has been diagnosed with vocal paralysis. She wonders how common this is and how soon can she expect her voice to return. She's had it since December and is, as you might expect, feeling frustrated.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, so the vocal cords or vocal folds, you could say either one is fine. The more modern version is vocal folds, but they work as a little V-shaped valve, right? Below the level of your Adam's apple, and they open and close to allow us to perform all the functions of breathing, swallowing, voice, cough, and something called Valsalva maneuver. And when one of them is paralyzed, people end up with a breathy, harsh voice, sometimes with a so-called double voice, double sound, where it breaks in and out, almost like a yodel. And that's really frustrating. Furthermore, people end up with swallowing issues, particularly when they try to swallow thin liquids. They cough and choke a lot at mealtimes. It's scary. Their family members are concerned. And when it's severe, people can even get pneumonias, aspiration pneumonias. So in answer to your question, that was a long preface, wasn't it? Sorry about that.
It's all right.
In answer to your question, if there's no good reason for you to have a vocal cord paralysis that can be found by CAT scan, then the usual recovery time to figure out if it will recover poorly, well, or excellently is about 6 to 9 months from the date of onset of your symptoms. And so, although, furthermore, I should mention that while there is a waiting period, there are things that can be done for you, even in the office, whether it's voice therapy or whether it's an actual injection of a material to move your vocal cord over so that the other one can meet it.
Oh.
And even that can be done in an office setting, and it takes half an hour, and it's really not a big deal. So just because you're in a waiting period doesn't mean that you have to wait and do nothing. You can wait and get help also.
And what about John, who emailed in to say his vocal cords don't act together? One is vibrating in one direction. The other is the opposite, apparently. Can something be done? He's using a voice amplifier at present. Non-smoker. Didn't smoke. What do you think about that, Brianne?
I think if the vocal cord vibration is enough that it's changing his volume, that he has to use an amplifier, and potentially the pitch. Sometimes when we see the vibration patterns change, and Dr. Daly alluded to this a moment ago, you can get different tones, two pitches at once, or not have as good pitch control. And then if you also lack volume, that could be something where, yes, you can use things like the amplifier and kind of mitigate your environment. Maybe you have people stay within an arm's distance of you so you don't have to shout loud. You watch for background noise being minimal. But ultimately, there may be some things therapeutically that could be done, voice exercises, to try to regain some of that stability, volume, and even to see if something from the actual structure has changed. And so the cameras that we were discussing earlier, if we are able to look down there and capture that moment where he's noticing these changes, that gives us so much information. And then the really great thing is, one of the parts of my job that I love is to be able to then let people try different things and see it on the screen. Does this work? Does this work? And so they can do all sorts of different fun things. And that tells us a lot of information diagnostically, but also to let them know, hey, you know what? We think with a solid course of therapy, you could make these improvements. So you don't have to be just left with hobbling by, I guess.
Herb is about 80, I think, and has a voice clearing problem. He didn't have it before, but now suddenly he's got a seeming like he's got to clear his throat. Serious?
In the sense of, like we're talking about with voice quality changes, chronic throat clearing is a chronic problem. It is one of those things that can be the first sign that something else is going on. So it is definitely important that if you or usually family members are noticing chronic throat clearing, to get that evaluated by a team like ourselves. But also it can be, you know, related to age-related changes, you know, dryness. The vocal fold tissue kind of weakens, and that can be irritating. For some people as they're trying to talk through this change in their voice. But yes, chronic throat clearing can also be something that we need to say is a precursor to something, you know, further going on, or just a habit that they need to break. And we actually do therapy for chronic throat clears. So it is something that if people are annoyed enough, they will come seek our help.
And one last point on that is that particularly as folks get older, the number of medications that they take tends to rise.
Yeah.
And it's very rare to find a medication for which on the warning list or side effects list, it does not include dry throat, throat clear, voice change, et cetera. Because many of the medications that we take, particularly in that age group, can dry out your whole body, which of course dries out the vocal cords. And not inevitably, but almost, people end up doing more of that and having sort of subtle changes over time.
Well, this has been a great 45 minutes. I want to thank you both so much. And do you guys have online? Do you have more information? And what's your website? I think we have a link, but go ahead and give it.
We do. We have both our UW otolaryngology clinic through the Department of Surgery, as well as then our UW Voice and Swallow clinic. And so both of those you can look up and check out our services. There's videos for information of what we do and what to expect when to come to a visit. And then, of course, there's the worldvoice.org website to check out the events.
Worldvoice.org. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks so much. I hope you'll come back and be with us again.
Can't wait.
Thank you.
Yeah,
that would
be
wonderful.
Great to have you. Seth Daly, Dr. Seth Daly, Chief of Laryngology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Brianne Ruel, a speech-language pathologist. Don't they do a great job? It was really wonderful to have them with us today, and wonderful to have you listening in. And, hey, stay with us. Lots more in store.